Greetings and peace. This is Dr. Lawrence Brown welcoming you back to another episode of Interfaith Issues, where we discuss the issues of common interest to the three monotheistic Abrahamic faiths of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. I am going to be discussing today something that is a very big change from what I have done in the past, something I think you will find more fun, more enjoyable, and I hope that it will be mind-broadening. What I'm going to be discussing is my latest book, The Eighth Scroll. This is the book, and I have recently completed a series of radio interviews in America in which one of the very first questions I was asked regarding this book was a question I think a lot of people are interested to hear the answer to, and that is simply why I wrote this book. The reason I wrote The Eighth Scroll is because, in simple terms, it was simply a slam dunk of an action-adventure novel. I think I am like many people. All of my life, I have been reading action-adventure novels, and I've been thinking, how did this author get the idea for that plot and bring it all together? And I've always been looking for something that I felt I could write about in the same way. Well, I found it. I found it in the Dead Sea Scrolls and in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. The Eighth Scroll captures these two very dynamic, very interesting, extremely controversial issues. The issues of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. The book starts by transporting the reader from ancient times to modern times, leading them from the Western society with which most familiar to the Middle Eastern society and the setting of the Holy Land. At the same time that it is transporting the reader not only through time, but across the globe, it is transporting the reader through different ideologies. You will find representatives of different countries, different faiths, and the expression of their cultures and their beliefs. But most of all, what you will find is a very dynamic action-adventure that simply makes for fun reading. Now, let me start by giving a little bit of a taste for the content of the Eighth Scroll. I'll start by pointing out that the Dead Sea Scrolls for most people are a mystery. Most people don't understand what the excitement is about the Dead Sea Scrolls. Okay, we found a bunch of old scrolls. They confirm books of the Old Testament. So what? Well, the important aspect of the Dead Sea Scrolls is that they were hidden away by a Jewish community believed to be the Essenes, but whoever it was does not really very much matter. What does matter is that the scrolls were hidden on or about the year 68 CE. Now that puts it about 30 years after the ministry of Jesus Christ. So the excitement about the Dead Sea Scrolls was the hope that they would tell us something about what was going on in Judea at that time. They were hidden away 30 years after the mission of Jesus Christ, so we were hoping that the Dead Sea Scrolls would shed some light on the early Jewish/Christian community. For the most part, that hope was frustrated. For the most part, the Dead Sea Scrolls did not shed much light. However, the Dead Sea Scrolls do speak of a teacher of righteousness who was opposed by a wicked priest, also known as the man of the lie, the man of scoffing, the man or the priest who made things easy. In other words, a priest who took the restrictions of Old Testament law and made things easy. And what could be more easy than negating the laws? Interestingly enough, this is exactly what we find in the Bible. In the New Testament, we find in the book of Matthew, we find Jesus Christ having said, "Do not think that I have come to change the law. I have not come but to fulfill." Well, Paul then took a very opposite stance. Paul basically denied the law. We find in present day that more Christians are following Paul than they are following the teachings of Rabbi Jesus, an Old Testament Jew who taught and followed himself Old Testament law. The point being that there is very good evidence to suggest that the wicked priest, the priest who made things easy, referenced in the Dead Sea Scrolls, could be Paul, and the teacher of righteousness might be Jesus. So, whether the teacher of righteousness was Jesus, James, or another of his disciples, somebody carrying on his teachings of righteousness, whether or not Paul was the wicked priest mentioned in the Dead Sea Scrolls, this is a very dynamic issue. But we have to consider some of the light that scholars have shed on this issue. The Dead Sea Scrolls Deception by Michael Bagent and Richard Lay states the following, quote, "Paul is in effect the first Christian heretic." Oh, strong words. Paul is in effect the first Christian heretic, and his teachings, which become the foundation of later Christianity, are a flagrant deviation from the original or pure form extolled by the leadership. That is the book, The Dead Sea Scrolls Deception, their comment on this very issue. It has been pointed out that other scholars in the field believe that the Damascus document, one of the Dead Sea Scrolls, appears to document the excommunication of Paul from the early Christian community. Now, this is not a big surprise to scholars in the field who recognize the animosity between Paul and James, between Paul and Peter, between Paul and Barnabas. It is well documented in the New Testament that the disciples were in opposition to Paul. Read James. We find James condemning Paul in the strongest of terms in the language of that time and telling him to repent, which he does not completely succeed at doing. So these are huge controversies, but what we find is we find that this controversy, it threatens our lives, it threatens our religions, it threatens our salvation. So this is something to take seriously. Let me read you a quote from the Dead Sea Scrolls. Quote, "This concerns those who were unfaithful together with the liar, in that they did not listen to the word received by the teacher of righteousness from the mouth of God." The Damascus document, one of the Dead Sea Scrolls, reveals that the teacher of righteousness claimed to be the one through whom God would convey, quote, "the hidden things in which Israel had gone astray." Was this not Jesus' declared purpose, his reason for being? Was it not Jesus Christ who stated, quote, "He was not sent but to the lost sheep of the house of Israel"? And we find in the Dead Sea Scrolls saying, in very similar language, that the teacher of righteousness would convey the word of God, conveying, quote, "the hidden things in which Israel had gone astray." So, the eighth scroll places the reader smack dab in the middle of this controversy. At the same time, because the setting is the Holy Land, smack dab in the middle of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And yet, It does it in the context of a fun read, an action adventure. Why? Let's face it. A lot of books have been written on this subject. A lot of scholarly books. A lot of dry, extremely scholarly, put you to sleep kind of books. I didn't want to write that. I wanted to write a dynamic book that people would read for the fun, for the thrill, for the action, for the adventure of the book. Let me put you in the scene of the time, in the time of 68 CE. According to our Bibles, John the Baptist was imprisoned and beheaded around 34 CE. Following this, Jesus Christ started his ministry, which lasted for 3 years. Upon the conclusion of his ministry, the Romans hunted down his disciples and killed them. Those who were not killed, those who were able to escape, disappeared from the historical record. And I am just getting into a hint of how interesting this gets. But it's time to take a break. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
I feel the peace, I feel the peace inside of me. I feel the peace, I feel the peace inside of me.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Lawrence Brown. We're discussing in this issue the Dead Sea Scrolls, my book upon the subject, The Eighth Scroll, which can be found on Amazon.com and on my website. No surprise to anybody, eighthscroll.com. I was starting to lay down some of the history to describe the setting of the book, and I will continue. The main voice that came out of this period was not the voice of one of the disciples, but rather the voice of one of the hunters. Paul, also known as Saul of Tarsus, but better known as the, quote, Apostle Paul, was a Pharisee. He was a member of the Jewish priestly class that Jesus Christ condemned. And yet, he was the main voice to have risen during this period as an expression of his view of Christianity. On the basis of Paul's alleged vision and alleged conversion, he set about conveying his view of Jesus' teachings. Nonetheless, the Romans eventually caught up with Paul, imprisoned him around 61 CE. Notice we're getting closer to 68 CE, which is when the story of the Eighth Scroll starts. We presume that the Romans executed him. This has never been proven, but that is the story most commonly told. Now, none of this history makes the year 68 any more interesting than the year 60 or the year 55. But what does make 68 interesting was Nero's death. Nero was the fifth and last Roman emperor in the Julio-Claudian dynasty. He had spent 14 years establishing for himself the most notorious record of any Roman emperor. He had committed a list of notorieties that shamed him in front of the world and concluded with him becoming mad, becoming insane. Now, we should not be too surprised that this happened with Nero. We should not be too surprised that he was such a horrific person if we look at his lineage. His mother was the sister of Caligula. Not only that, but she had unusually close ties with her brother, Caligula. Everybody knows how horrific Caligula was. Many people know that it was a common practice during the Roman Empire for the emperors and their sisters to know each other, how can I say it, extremely well. Incest among the emperors was not uncommon. It was considered a preservation of the pure blood of the aristocracy. There's every reason to suspect that Nero was the product of incest, that his father was Caligula, also known for the horrific character he was. So it should not surprise us that Nero himself became a horrific character. His mother, Agrippina, had some ambitions of her own, but Nero defended his throne to the point where he killed off every possible descendant, including his mother, including his adoptive brother. When his mother knew that her assassin was killing her on the orders of her son, she told her assassin to stab her where? In her womb. In her womb. As punishment for that womb having borne her wicked son Nero. So you can see how the emotions were boiling during this period, even within his own family. Legion's transgressions were legion. His excesses were extraordinary. His transgressions and his perversity, horrific. But what we need to remember for the Eighth Scroll as background is the accusation that Nero started the Great Fire of Rome in 64. After the Great Fire of Rome, he set about rebuilding Rome as a center of art. He considered himself an artisan. He wanted Rome to be a showplace of art. This was no inexpensive project, and he exhausted the treasury and started looking for money wherever he could find it. One of the places he could find it was the treasury of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, and he sent orders to his representative in Jerusalem to take from the treasure in the temple. Well, the Jews had been under Roman rule. They had been oppressed, they had been terrorized, but taking from the treasure of their temple was the final straw. In 66, the Jews revolted, and they started the Jewish rebellion against Roman rule. The Jewish rebellion lasted from 66 until 70, when the Jewish temple was destroyed and Jerusalem was taken over by the Romans. And it even continued after that until the year 73, which is when the infamous Battle of Masada occurred. For most historians, they place the battle from 66 to 70. Now we're right in the period of 68 when the story starts. What happened in this period was that Nero sent Vespasian, a battle-hardened general, to sweep through the Holy Land and subjugate it. And that's exactly what he did. Every town he came upon, he demanded their submission to the Roman Empire, and if they did not submit, he destroyed them utterly, killed the men, raped and subjugated the women, imprisoned them along with their children, and sold them as slaves, cut down all of the fruit-bearing trees, burned the village and the crops, and sowed salt into the fields so that they could not bear a crop again. Utterly destroyed. Utterly destroyed any population who would not submit. And one of the populations that was destroyed were the keepers of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now we can only speculate as to what happened in this time, but it appears that at least some of the scrolls were hidden away in the caves close to the area in which this Jewish community lived. And it is those scrolls that were preserved until their discovery in 1947 as the Dead Sea Scrolls. Now, there's a great deal more drama, there's a great deal more dynamics to the story, and as you get into it, you will understand it as you go. But that is the basic background setting. So 68 was a very interesting year. On one hand, you had the Roman Empire trying to gain money for its treasury. On the other hand, you have the same Roman Empire thrown into turmoil. Because one thing I didn't mention is that after Nero set this ball into motion, he became insane. He was thrown out and he lost his position as emperor and committed suicide. This threw the Roman Empire into upheaval. Over the next year, four different emperors tried to sit the throne, and only one was able to hold it. And that was the returning Vespasian, victorious from his battles in the Holy Land. But at the same time that the Roman Empire was in upheaval, searching for an emperor, searching for guidance within their own empire, the Jews were in rebellion not only against the Romans, but against one another. You had different groups among the Jews. You had extremists, you had the Sadducees, you had the Pharisees. You had even some professional assassins, which were kind of the ninjas of the Jewish world. And these actions were working against one another, trying to develop a supremacy within the Jewish population. Jerusalem, when it was assaulted in the year 70, was fully prepared to carry out the longest siege in history. It had water supplies in the form of wells. It had huge food stores. It was a walled enclave which could have held out for who knows how long. But in order to force the population to battle, the extremists among them set fire to the food stores. Once the food stores were gone, by the force of starvation, the Jews of Jerusalem were forced to take the battle outside the walls of Jerusalem to the Romans, and this precipitated the fall of Jerusalem. In the middle of all of this, we have the keepers of the scrolls fighting for their own survival and fighting for the preservation of the message that they held as holy in the form of the scrolls that they were charged to preserve. And it is the story of the preservation of those scrolls, the bringing of those scrolls to light, and most particularly of one scroll, a fictional scroll whose content was so controversial that when found, it could not be revealed. And that is the setting of the Eighth Scroll. Now, I hope to come back in another episode and give you a taste of the book in the form of a reading. But we'll have to save that for next time. For now, this is Dr. Lawrence Brown concluding another episode of Interfaith Issues. Until next time, peace.